Hi there, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with the Positive Mind. Bringing you ideas, concepts, guests, and associates in the studio with me, Stephanie Dombra, today. Steph.
Hi, Armand.
Well, this is all exciting. This is kind of interesting. It was a short time ago, maybe a year ago or so, we did a report by a man whose brother... Was this now? Remember who this was? The psychiatrist? Or
yes, it was a psychiatrist who, I think he was actually related to the Unabomber. And he described this condition, which was schizophrenia, that the Unabomber had a mental illness.
And he had this illness, and so came the big question, but why he was on the air, what he did that was remarkable, is he talked about that condition called anosognosia. Now, anosognosia, there's a funny big word. After a while, so we've been working on this quite a bit, and I've been paying a lot of attention to it, mentioned it on air a few times. This past week in the New York Times, they talk about an arrest in bank robbery, and it went like this. Let me tell you what happened. At 5'6" and about 270 pounds, bank robbery suspect MacArthur Wheeler is not the type of person who fades into the woodwork. So at no surprise, he was recognized by informants who tipped detectives to his whereabouts, and he was arrested for committing this crime. Less than an hour after the broadcast, he was arrested. Okay. Now, how he was arrested, he had walked into two Pittsburgh banks and attempted to rob them in broad daylight. While the case particularly he made no visible attempt to disguise himself, the surveillance tapes were key to his arrest. There he was with a gun, standing in front of a teller demanding money, and when arrested, Wheeler was completely disbelieving. He said, "But I wore the juice." Apparently, he's under the deeply misguided impression that rubbing one's face with lemon juice renders it invisible to video cameras. Now, in a follow-up article, he spoke to several Pittsburgh police detectives who were involved in Wheeler's arrest. They assured that Wheeler had not gone into this thing blindly, but he had performed a number of tests on himself before the robbery. Wheeler had said he put lemon juice on his face, burning his face and his eyes, and then he tested his theory. He took a Polaroid picture of himself, and he couldn't see himself in the picture. Therefore, he knew it worked. Sad. It was like a long version of Where's Waldo with no Waldo, you know what I mean? It was, he tried to come up with an explanation of why no image on the Polaroid. There's a lot of reasons why, but if the problem was this, if Wheeler did not have the intelligence to be a bank robber, perhaps he had no way of knowing that he didn't have the intelligence to be a bank robber. Do you understand that? Let me try that again. Obviously, this guy is not very intelligent. And if he doesn't have the intelligence to be a bank robber, does he have the intelligence to recognize that he doesn't have the intelligence? Now, this is an interesting concept. Because anosognosia, once again, anosognosia, once again, is the inability to recognize that there is something wrong with you. Why do I bring this up? Why do I mention this? I mention it because I've seen so many people over and over again, compassionate human beings, trying to explain the idiosyncrasies and oddities of their mates and their parents. You know, you'd hear a tale about a man who beats his son, his 5-year-old son, mercilessly with a belt, screaming at him that you're bad, you're bad, you're bad, you don't obey. When you couldn't imagine how could somebody do that? Well, they say he lost it. What did he lose? Did he lose awareness of himself? Is that what losing it means? Arguments between couples, fights, marital fights, some of the most horrendous stuff you'll ever hear. People screaming at each other, yelling at each other, hitting each other. What's going on? Don't we know that at the moment the first blow is struck, both people are crazy? Don't we know this? By crazy, I mean if you've got to a point where a blow is being struck, then there was not a sane person in the room. Because let's say you have somebody who's acting out in a funny kind of way, and they're, let's say they're even, I was just thinking about alcohol, that may be a different case. But let's say a little argument starts, and then the argument gets worse and worse. There are two people who are in this argument. If it gets to the point where it becomes violent, it means neither person had the sensibility to withdraw. And sometimes, if you see something about to become violent, the sensible thing is get out of there, withdraw. Usually violence, where both people start hitting each other, that's almost like an invitation. It's like you want to do it. So when you're asking, what were you fighting about, they make things up. We make up things. But isn't it clear that if you're raising your hand to your child or to your mate, that you lost it? Now, what's the it that you lost? You lost the awareness of yourself. In another paper, a guy named Justin Kruger, Unskilled and Unaware of It, How Difficulties of Recognizing One's Own Incompetence Leads to Inflated Self-Assessments. Do you know that 70% of the people claim to be above-average drivers? It's true. 70% of the people think that they're above-average driver, which, of course, is impossible. You can't have 70% being above-average. You can't judge yourself that way. When people are incompetent in the strategies they adopt to achieve success and satisfaction, they suffer a dual burden. How many people do you know that have a plan? I got a plan. I'm just going to get this job. I got a plan. I'm just going to do this. I have a plan. I'm just going to mack this up. I'm going to make this work. I'm going to do this right. I have a plan. I have a plan. I have a plan. And the strategies don't work. And you see they're not going to work. And so every time they come to you with another strategy, you say to yourself, I know this isn't going to work. This is still part of that mind that just feels outside of itself. But when you're in the middle of it, you believe these things are true. When you're in the middle of a mind that's searching and frantic, you believe everything that you're frantic about is true. How is that? Why don't we see ourselves? Why don't we get to a point where we say, wait a minute, wait a minute. I'm thinking crazy. I'm so nervous, I'm a wreck. I can't believe anything that I'm saying. I can't believe anything.
I think people just really are emotionally flooded, Armand, and we know that there's all sorts of chemistry around being flooded when we're emotional and we're intensely kind of focused, that maybe other parts of the brain aren't quite working, like the sense of awareness or the ability to reason or our ability to judge a certain circumstance. So it could be that all that adrenaline. I know a lot of people, when they describe that they're trying to perform on stage or in class, they need to raise their hand. That anxiety, there's a term for it. It's like when you're trying to read a book and the words are blank, you can't see anything. There may be mechanisms in the brain just that shut down other things because we're flooded, whether it's with adrenaline, cortisol, or emotions, or dopamine, and we can't process everything the way we normally would if we're in a calm state.
We talked about on Tuesday, we talked about the forest floor, was it? No, about the community of the brain. What was it called?
The ecosystem, but he said brain forest.
Brain forest.
Oh, I liked that so much.
That there's a little forest in our brains of all the different parts of our brain communicating with the rest of the brain. That it isn't just one part, the amygdala, that's not doing deals. It's not that's working with thalamus and so on and so forth. No, these are all working together. And it's a system. It's a system of things working together. When you get out of whack, the system is not working. The checks are not working. Now, We're talking about asognosia. We're talking about the inability, anosognosia, I'm sorry. We're talking about the inability to perceive yourself when there is something wrong. And now we talk about people who don't see their incompetence. Now, a good example of this is if you watch one of the American talent shows, if you see any of these America's Got Talent or any of these shows, or American Idol, very often somebody will get up on stage and they will be very poor. They'll sing off key, they'll be bad performers. What's happened to these people is they don't know they can't sing. They believe they can sing. They practiced in a basement. They practiced all by themselves. They sang to themselves, and they had a mother who came down and said, "Oh, honey, you sound wonderful. Keep going." And then this person gets out, gets on stage, and they realize that they don't realize it, but they get booed. And they don't understand it. And when you look at the interview afterwards, they say, "I don't understand. I gave it my best." Or there's something wrong with the judges. Anosognosia. See, and this is what you're seeing. You're seeing anosognosia in people. We used to call it denial. Now, denial is a river. No, denial is what we used to believe as we see something, but we don't want to see it. Therefore, we deny its existence. For example, your mother doesn't love you. Your mother finds you an annoyance. Your mother finds you like she wishes you weren't there. Very often you grow up and you get the feeling that you're unwanted. But you don't want to see it. So you look at your mother and you think, "Oh, really, that's my mother's way of loving me." That's denial. Denial is when you perceive something but can't accept what you perceive. So we used to think it was all denial, but we're beginning to see that denial is no longer just denial. That the word anosognosia means that a patient does not recognize or understand the nature of their illness. A person does not recognize or understand the nature of their illness. People sometimes experience this anosognosia after they have strokes or brain injuries. Very often they don't know there's something wrong with them. People with Alzheimer's very often don't know there's something wrong with them. Half of the people with schizophrenia don't believe they're sick. Very interesting stories about schizophrenia. Has to relate to surveys that were done around the world. They found that anosognosia is a cause of the violent behavior in individuals with severe psychiatric disorders such as schizophrenia. And what they found was the following. People take medication and people don't take medication. The people who take medication for their schizophrenia have to be saying something to take that medication. They are saying, "You know I'm sick and I need medication." So they take it. The other people who don't take the medication do not believe that they are sick. And it is the anosognosia, the inability to perceive it, that leads them not to take the medication. Now, let's say, of course, you're a holistic health practitioner and you're saying, "But you're taking that stuff, it's poison." Well, learn to take the stuff in moderation and learn to replace it with some other things. But stay on top of the fact that you do have the illness. Bipolar disorder. That's a real illness. You know, major depression. It's a real illness. There are a lot of things. Hyperactivity. ADD. There's a lot of things that if you could recognize, here's what it is, it gives you a better shot. Because here's what happens to schizophrenic people. In the United States, 133 outpatients were assessed for violent behavior over 6 months. During that period, 13% of the study group were violent. Of those violent patients, 85% believed that they were not ill. So understand that part of what led to the violence was the perception, "There's nothing wrong with me." If you ask somebody, if somebody is behaving in a very bizarre way, and they're acting in a very bizarre way, and they clearly have some mental disturbance, If they can't see that disturbance, they're potentially violent. So you want to know when you walk around somebody when they don't know. That's when you circumvent. That's when you don't want to necessarily get too involved. If somebody comes to you and says, yes, I've got a major depression, I've got a problem, and I have this problem, and I'm aware of it, that's much safer person to love. Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. We're going to be taking your calls about this, too, in a little bit. In the United States, 2,000 people with schizophrenia were studied, and they found that the ones who did not recognize that they had schizophrenia were most associated with being arrested and victimized. Now, get this. If you have a disorder, if you have something wrong, let's say you're autistic. Autistic people, well, you can help me with this a little bit, Stephanie. Do you think autistic people recognize autism, or what is their perception?
I think they don't really understand. Also, it depends on the intelligence, and we had the discussion about this the other day, that it's on a continuum. So there may be people clearly that know that. The woman that was on the internet and the person who's done the documentary, she clearly knows that she had autism and has autism. So in mild cases, I would assume that those people definitely know that there's something different about themselves.
And if you have it and you recognize it, then at least you're not going to expect that you're going to have the reactions that you should have and that people will have regular reactions to you. People may react to you funny. I mean, just imagine if you saw Tourette's, if you had Tourette's syndrome, right? Now, in Tourette's syndrome, every now and then you're going to come out cursing and screaming and doing something that's very, very antisocial. Imagine if you weren't aware of your Tourette's. Then people told you how funny you sounded, but the episode is over. It would be a really difficult way to live. So this, how many people have you known who have been not aware of the illness that they've had? Now, this goes to many physical illnesses as well. You know, this is not only a need. I mean, there are a lot of people who are suffering from physical illnesses, and they deny the existence. There are some people who have lost all sensation in an arm, but they will conduct themselves as if their arm is fully functioning, and they make excuses for why their arm is not functioning. You'll say to them, lift this with your left hand, and they'll say, oh, I can't, I'll use my right hand. So it's a condition that's a very difficult condition to live with. One of the other aspects of this, before we take your calls at 212-209-2900, one of the other things about this condition is that when you can't see what you are, then all that you could do is blame the other guy for being wrong, for pointing the finger at you. Self-awareness, it's such a wonderful gift. It's such a tool, but it's no longer, in my mind, a matter of denial and you don't want to see it. There are just some people who can't see. I've seen so many patients who have come to see me, and they said, but I don't know what's wrong with me. My wife wants to get a divorce. I don't see this part of me. Can you help me see it? My new tact, as opposed to my old tact, was, yes, I'll help you see it, and you can keep showing and showing and showing, and maybe you break through. My new tact is, no, there are certain people who never see it. And that you never see it, and you can't see what part you're playing in the dramas of your life, and you're unable to see it, you're unable to recognize it, right, is part of what comes with this illness. Now, seeing it doesn't mean you're going to beat yourself over the head for being that way. Quite the opposite. Once you begin to see that your panic and your nervousness is as a result of your inability to see that you're beginning to panic. I mean, what happens in a panic attack? A nervous person is there, and they're nervous, and suddenly, for one reason or another, the brain starts firing all over the place. Suddenly, you get nervous. You're feeling irritated. You're feeling agitated. What's the first thing the brain says? The brain says, hey, you're having a danger reaction. That's what we call panic. where's the danger? And it goes to look and it says, I want you to think about all these different things and maybe you'll find the danger. And you start saying, it's because I don't have money in the bank. It's because my mother didn't return a call. It's because my son didn't call me. It's because of, and you start fetching for reasons to be nervous, which of course makes you more nervous. Now you're getting nervous and you're creating more nervousness. And if you love this person, the thing you want to do is put your arms around them and say, stop, stop, stop thinking. Please stop thinking. Just relax. But once you get into that kind of a panic, you can't stop. And the best thing a person could do who loves you is watch you and wait for you till you burn yourself out. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Let's take one of your calls, 212-209-2900. Hi. Okay. Oh, no one's called yet. Good. 212-209-2900. In the past, people attributed the failure to recognize symptoms of schizophrenia to denial. We used it as denial. We thought it was denial. And then there's a denial. And there's another situation, which is like alcoholism, denial, right? Drug addiction, denial. In those conditions, you don't say to yourself, or do you? Let's think about that for a minute, Stephanie. Agnosognosia and alcoholism. Can you picture the person who says, I don't have a problem drinking?
I do see that a lot, Armand. Yeah. So I wonder if it's, again, because of chemical imbalances, or is there something organic, structural that's going on in the brain? It seems that that might be the case, because clearly alcohol intake and abuse is upsetting the chemistry.
Well, you know, there's a very interesting thing that we used to do when I was studying the alcohol with Sam Barandes. We were studying alcohol and its effect on memory. And we did find that alcohol inhibited the protein synthesis in the synapse. So there was no, at the synapse of the brain, there was no protein synthesis, meaning that there were gaps and losses of memory. If alcohol has the power to short-circuit the memory by disconnecting one nerve from another, of course it has the power to give you complete denial of your experience. So maybe it's in there that we'll eventually find the answer. 212-209-2900, let's take a call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. I go to a therapist, a psychologist, and just for daily stresses, and I believe my daughter is bipolar. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I'm trying to get her help because she's crying a lot, and she's laughing a lot. She's switching. She's going to her father's house, and when she gets mad at him, she wants to live with me, and it's back and forth. I can't get her to go to a therapist, let alone a psychologist. Do you have any advice for me?
What does your psychologist say?
My psychologist says that it seems like the pattern of behavior with my daughter, that she may be bipolar, have bipolar tendencies.
So what does he say about helping you get her into treatment?
Excuse me?
What does he say about how to help your daughter find some help?
I wish that he would say a little bit more, but basically I'm listening. I'm trying to give her, the right advice to get her out of her life.
Okay, so let's back up a little. Here's something I hear about you. I hear that you have a therapist that you can't get a straight answer from. Why is that?
That's true. I guess I kind of go for myself.
Is
my
it free
own
therapy or something?
No, okay. It's not free.
Okay, it's not free. So, first of all, straighten out your relationship with your therapist. The very thing that makes you not straighten out your relationship with your therapist may be part of the problem of why you can't get your relationship straight with your daughter. You know, maybe it's in there somewhere. So get to practice. That's what therapy is. Therapy is practicing to be who you really are.
Okay.
Now, let me help you with your problem as well. One of the tricks that we use is you say that you are going to bring you say, I want to bring you in because I need your help with my therapist. My therapist wants to understand me from your perspective.
Okay.
Now, even though that's a little bit of a trap, it is very possible that your daughter is dying to find some help. But she doesn't know how to cross over from being unavailable to being available. And she may need some kind of invitation. So one of the things I recommend to people is bring your parent, bring that person in. Now, if they come in to see me, now mind you, we're setting a trap here. Mind you, this is not the most ethical thing in the world. We're telling the person they're coming in to see the therapist about mom. Well, the truth of it is they are coming in to see the therapist about mom because the therapist does want to know what's going on with them also. And if by chance they should connect, the therapist might make a suggestion. If the person asks for help, the therapist might make a suggestion. And that's the process I've seen work with resistant people.
She's so resistant. She doesn't believe it's her fault at all, anything.
Yeah, well, maybe it's not her fault, you know? Maybe your daughter needs to listen to today's program and understand that this very thing is not her fault, but that maybe there's some help.
How often are you on?
Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
At what time?
At 1 p.m. And if you go to thepositivemind.com, you can actually play an archive of today's program. You could hear us talk about how much you love your daughter. Tell me the most beautiful thing about your daughter.
She's got so many qualities. I mean, she's beautiful. She's athletic. She's pretty smart.
Can't hear you very well.
She's beautiful. She's smart. She's athletic. It's just she's got this temper, and she flies off the handle and screams and then cries, and I don't want to accept it because she's cursing. So I tell her she can't go out, and then that's more resistance, and she wants to move with her father, and it's constant. And my son, it was a whole different story. He was so easygoing. It was so easy to raise
Okay,
him.
Well, that was, when I was asking you to say something positive about your daughter, you had a hard time coming up with a positive. You just told me about all the things that she does wrong.
Oh, no.
She's a beautiful person, huh?
Yeah, she's athletic. She's got when she's nice, she's a sweetheart. But when she's the other side.
You know what I'm beginning to hear? I'm beginning to hear chemical imbalance. And I know so is Stephanie, you know. You're hearing hormones and you're hearing chemical imbalance. And being athletic is not necessarily a good indication. You know, it isn't necessarily one. It could be an indication of some kind of strange chemistry going on as well, since that's the first thing you point to about her. Is she on teams and stuff like that? Is she a competitor?
Yeah, she's a competitive cheerleader.
Yeah, very interesting combination. Well, anyway, I hope that comes to some kind of help. But, you know, what could be going on with her could be absolutely, absolutely hormonal, chemical, a whole bunch of things as well as in her mind. So it's tough.
Okay.
And if you show the compassion and you say to her, look, my therapist wants to meet you because he wants to understand me from your perspective, it might work.
All right, thanks a lot for your help. I'll definitely keep tuning in to you.
Great. Thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We are, we don't have time for another call yet. We don't have time for another call. We will be going back with our calls at 212-209-2900. But right now, we're going to take a short break. And after that break, we'll be back with you with just a little bit of pretty music. And we'll continue with our program. We'll be right back. The Velveteen Rabbit, which is, who did the Velveteen Rabbit, Stephanie? Who did the voiceover on it?
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep, right. Marjorie Williams also did. Hey, 212-209-2900. We're talking about anosognosia. We're talking about the inability to see when you have something wrong with you. There was another very interesting place that you very often see this, and you see it with grammar. You know, you grow up in a neighborhood, and in the neighborhood I grew up, and you wind up with certain grammar, and you've met some people who just talk badly. Badly, like they grew up in the streets and they never got out of the streets. But if you're a certain type of person and you hang out in a certain community, you misuse words all the time. You misuse them, you use the wrong grammar, you use the wrong diction, and you get so used to doing it that you can't perceive that there's something wrong with the way you're speaking. And if somebody brings it to your attention, it makes no sense at all. Because you feel, wait, how could I be? Now, if you, on the other hand, you're somebody who grew up like that and says, you know, but I talk like I'm from the streets, and you know it, you're going to improve because you're aware of it. I've watched that improvement with people. So all the students were doing, in an article about 1999, the test subjects were all college students doing college student-type things. When we had the students who were doing badly in grammar, who didn't know they were doing badly in grammar, and they believed. They were asked, how do you do in grammar? And they rated themselves as being above normal, above average. So are they in denial? Are they hiding? Or is that the way it feels when something is wrong with you and you don't know it? When something is wrong with the other person and they don't know it? 212-209-2900, let's take a call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Armand, hi. I have a quick question for you.
Sure.
You know, you were talking earlier about, like, you know, I've been asked many, many times by different mental health professionals in different environments, do I hear voices? Do I, you know, I've been told time and time again, I do not have schizophrenia. However, what I do have is I talk to myself constantly, not verbally, but I constantly am like thinking things in kind of like an auditory way. But I know that it's not voices that I'm hearing that I don't know the voices, or it's not coming from outside myself, or it's not like I feel like I'm being followed, or any of the kind of things that, you know, are the classic picture of schizophrenia. However, I am, you know, earlier when you were describing people whose, you know, thoughts are like racing and they're constantly hearing themselves. So it's like, what do I have and how do I stop it in a non-medicinal way? I've tried every kind of medicine you could think of, but, and they usually have horrible side effects, at least for myself. I mean, what do I have? Because I've spoken to other people about this, and people say, well, sometimes I hear myself think, but not often. And
no,
me,
no, no.
It's
people are not going to understand. Mm-hmm. I really understand what you're talking about because I've seen enough people who have this.
Okay.
You know, one of the difficulties we have as therapists is we have categories we try to fit things in.
Right.
Delusions is one of our good words. We like delusions because if we see delusions, which includes voices that you hear, things that you see that may not be there, if we could believe that a person has delusions, we generally say this person has a schizophrenic quality.
Mm.
So now that puts us in a certain category that says the rainforest floor of the brain is not working exactly in harmony with the rest of the universe. This person is living in a different kind of world.
Mm-hmm.
And usually with that kind of case, they can give them some kind of a medication that helps balance the rainforest floor. And people who are acutely schizophrenic can't be in the world unless they take medication. There's just no place for them.
So are you saying that this is schizophrenia?
No, no.
Oh.
I'm going to say the opposite.
Oh.
And I'm also going to say that there is compulsive thinking.
Yes.
Now,
oh, that's definitely yes.
So what happens is what I described earlier. The engine goes off. You get nervous first. And this is what you think. You think that you think something first and then you get nervous.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is you get nervous first and then you start to think.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's what you got to find. Here's what you got to track. If we're going to find something different, let's find it this way. look to find if you could say to yourself, as soon as the thoughts go off, wait a minute, am I nervous?
Okay. Oh, I'm always nervous.
Right,
that's
I know. So
name.
Always is a bad word for nervous because it makes a wreck out of you. So you have to find a way to become unnervous. Now, I know that sounds like a big deal, but, you know, people who meditate can get there. People who eat certain foods can get there. Certain medications take you there. A shot of booze can take you there. There's a whole bunch of things that get the mind to quiet at times. The question is, how can you quiet your mind? And once you quiet your mind...
I wish.
You wish is right.
It happens every couple of years, so... Like, suddenly my mind has no thoughts, and even if I try to make them happen, they don't. And I say, oh, this is good. Well, what kind of foods?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I really don't know if it's dietary, because I'm sure that when you have a hyperactive mind like you do, there's a lot of chemical components mm-hmm. in it as well. I don't know. There you could talk to somebody about that, maybe Majita Lee or somebody.
So what do you call my condition other than hyperactive mind?
I call it hyperthinking.
Yeah.
So I do, I mean, and I see it as separate from, because it is your mind talking to itself.
Yeah.
It's like instead of having a forest floor that's in harmony, you have the parts that are talking to each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So but it is something that you can get to the bottom of.
Have you seen people conquer this?
Absolutely.
Really?
Because you got to get to a point where you no longer believe you're thinking. You just can't believe it.
That's what I sometimes think to myself. Like anything I say to myself for the first 2 hours in the morning is BS, if I could say.
Oh, that's perfect, because that's exactly when you're most likely to set a trigger that would get you off for the rest of the day. In the first 2 hours of the morning. I've noticed it with people when they wake up. I was talking to someone earlier today who tells me the minute she wakes up, she embraces the demon.
Yes, that's exactly how it is.
What I do.
Sometimes I have to go back to bed because my first half hour of my day is so bad, it just exhausts me.
I understand. What I used to do, I used to get up, look in the mirror, and if I felt grabbed by something, I'd look at my face and I'd just try to make peace with my face. It was a good trick. I used to like it. I used to just look at myself until I stopped thinking. You know, it kind of sometimes I think we forget that we're there.
Thank you kindly.
Sure. My pleasure.
Bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi. I would like to say something about the lady who called earlier about her daughter, if
yes.
that's okay.
Sure.
Something that I think might help. When people are bipolar, okay, so they have mood swings. They go from being depressed to being manic, and basically the goal would be to get them to a level where they're stable enough. They're in the middle. Both are controlled. And something that I think might help is kids don't really like listening to their parents. Maybe if she could get a friend to, like, let her know, this is what's happening, this is what I'm seeing, like, you're acting, that might help. Like, maybe if she could catch her in one of those mood swings and play back with her what happened, like, if she's getting irritated easily or is talking really fast, is acting a little bit hyper, and, like, I don't know, maybe if she could...
Have you done this?
Well, I know... I've been with people who are bipolar. I've taken DBT classes. I've taken years of therapy to treat my depression. So I've been around a lot of bipolar people. So,
and this is what could have helped you. If someone would have sat down with you and spoken to you that way?
Well, not me, because I'm not bipolar, but I've seen it with people. I've been around a lot of people who are bipolar. And
you know, it's a funny thing about our friends. We usually choose our friends who will support our pathology.
Yeah.
You know, whatever we got wrong with us, we usually choose friends who help us stay the way we are. So very often, you know, nervous people tend to choose friends that make them more nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they will all talk about how terrible the world is. And depressed people sometimes hang out with depressed people. So very often, the very first, the person we choose is a person who will not break into our, the sanctity of our minds.
Yeah.
So it would be very hard for a young friend, a young woman, to have a friend who would be sensible enough to talk to her in a way that she would not lose the friend. But I like this other thing you do. This other thing about the recording is fascinating. Maybe there's another way of doing it. Maybe what the mother and child have to do is create a creative endeavor together. Let's do a creative endeavor. Let's read a play.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make a play. Let's sing together. And they get the recording device to be a part of who they are. And then from there, the mother would ask the child, how did you sound on this to yourself?
Yes, exactly.
How did I sound? So now you can have a discussion about recordings. So I think your suggestion is brilliant, inasmuch as recording devices may help bring awareness to people when they are not willing to be aware in other ways. But you got to introduce this recording device in a benign way.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like, I know she's not going to realize that she's being hyper, or if she's being depressed, that she's is depressed until that stage, that episode is over, you know? Like, I've seen that that's when they look back and they're like, wow, I can't believe I did that, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, usually looking back and saying, I can't believe I did that, doesn't help you the next time around when you're in it. It just doesn't, you know? Mm-hmm. Somehow you got to catch it in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the suggestion. That's pretty intelligent.
By the way, A Beautiful Mind, I think everybody should watch that.
Yes, I
have. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yes, I have.
Okay, well, yeah, it's about schizophrenia and the guy and whatever. Well, I just think everybody should watch it.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, let's take another call. You're on the air. 212, there we go. Hello?
Armand?
Yes.
Hi, how are you? How you doing?
Good. Who is this?
This is Guillermo.
Guillermo himself. What a lovely thing. Hey, Stephanie, say hello to Guillermo.
Hello, Guillermo. How are you?
Hi, Stephanie. Let me take just 1 second to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your comment the other day on the station.
It
really touched my heart that day. I really want to thank you for that.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure because I was very touched by that DVD. I hope people are enjoying it.
Thank you. Thank you so,
so
much.
What we're talking about, let's talk about what we're talking about. What we're talking about is Guillermo, who is one of the most generous of our listeners and has really been helpful to people in general. He made a DVD of him dancing Michael Jackson. And he does a Michael Jackson, I guess, impersonation, but it's not really an impersonation. It's an honoring of Michael Jackson. And what he does, he sent us a DVD of it, and we saw it. It was just wonderful. And my cousin put it up on YouTube. So now it's available on YouTube for you to see. Have you looked at it a few times, Guillermo?
Yeah, I did. I did. And it's funny that you did that, because there were so many people already asking for me to do so, and I really never did anything about it. And you came to my life, and you did it.
Well,
a lot of people happy about that.
I got a 15-year-old guy who can do just about anything when it comes to computers. So he put it up there as well, so we'll thank him. And his name is Julian. Julian and Guillermo. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Julian. I have a question for you.
Sure.
I think that it might have to do with what you're talking about today. I'm going through this very difficult time in my life now with my marriage. Have a 3-year-old girl, and it's being a lesson for me, all of this, to the point that I'm being even telling the therapist that I have never felt so proud about myself, even though I'm going through so much painful times, because I'm taking into consideration everything that I can do from the inside of myself out. And but I have this situation with my wife. We got to a point that we were out of control with our arguments. We were just blaming each other or pointing to each other. So I stepped out of that. I became more about me instead of, when it comes to like taking responsibility of my emotions. But she stood there. And I pay attention to some of their complaints. I try to understand her, to have compassion for her. And some of the complaints, they made a lot of sense to me. I've been working on some of them. I found a lot of wonderful things that I could do better within those complaints. But at the same time, I always have this situation where I don't see her or I don't hear her taking any responsibility with herself. Like, it's almost not there. And that's the only part that really disturbed me about the whole situation, that I haven't seen her go into that path. Would that be part of what you're saying today?
Exactly. Exactly it can be, because when somebody is so lost, first of all, two things. Sometimes you got to deny that you have any fault whatsoever because you're afraid if you ever became vulnerable, you would be most likely to get hurt. So one of the ways you protect yourself is by blaming the other person. So that's blaming. But, you know, in a funny way, asking her to take responsibility is blaming her as well. So it becomes a kind of a thing back and forth, you know. If I'm taking responsibility, you have to take responsibility. The trick here is, and the thing that surprises me about you, Guillermo, is that you have not been able to get her to go for that therapy session.
I see what you mean. Yeah, it actually became a problem.
Yeah, I imagine it became a problem. And that is saying to me, oh, my gosh, wait a minute. These guys are on a real destructive path. Because if that becomes a problem, then you're saying they really don't look to heal.
The thing is that she would love to come. It become a problem for her by me doing it without telling her. Because we were going for therapy, the two of us together as a couple. Even though she's going to her own therapy.
Yeah, but there'll be a dozen reasons for a lot of different things.
I know.
Somehow you just got to make it happen.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, I haven't given up on that.
Stay on track, my friend. We're still with you.
Thank you so much, man.
My pleasure.
Have a great day. Bye-bye, Stephanie.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Guillermo.
212-209-2900. This is Armand Mill. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Are you in the subway?
I'm sorry. No, I'm on a 495. I'm driving.
All right. The old Long Island Expressway.
Yes, sir. Sorry about that. I don't know if you have a good...
It's a good enough connection. What can I do for you?
I know it's
very hot out there, but could you put the windows up for just a minute?
It's up. It's 99 degrees, but it's up.
99 degrees?
99 is showing on my thermometer here. Yeah. Well, you know, let me ask you something. I got a problem with my brother. I just came to my mind, and I was hearing the radio, and I asked to call you. My father says he's a sickness. He's a liar. He's just a liar.
Yeah.
He leaves the light, and he goes through that light, and he can die for that. Something that goes like whatever you want to do, you involve in people around him.
Let me understand. Your brother is somebody who lies all the time?
All the time.
Now, does he lie? I'm going to ask you a question about this. What's your name? What's your name?
Rodolfo.
Rodolfo, let me ask you. Yes. Does your brother lie about things he doesn't have to lie about? Like if you say to him, is it raining outside? Does he say no sometimes when it is?
No.
No, so like he this. Lies. He's not that he's the kind of a liar who must lie.
No, he lives the lie. He lives a life. I don't know.
Yeah,
everybody that is around him, I don't. It's like we live in the same city, but I see him like once a month and whatever. His friends and girlfriends, I never know nothing about him. Sometimes they don't even know he has a brother. And when I get, you know, involved with him, I find out a lot of things, but like brothers, adoptive brothers that we never had. He was a police officer, and you know, it's like he lives a lie. We can't deal with that. It's a big problem for the family.
Sure it is.
You know, it's like the guy, we can bring a wife and kids at your home and marry with the neighbor.
I understand, Rodolfo. I understand specifically how difficult that is to live with somebody who's always lying and never telling the truth. And it becomes very difficult because then when he gets together with the family, people look at each other and it's wondering if what he's saying is true. because yes. you never know if it's true or not.
And no, the nickname here is April 1st.
Yes, they name him April 1st.
It's like, you know, just wondering, my father said he was premature when I was a tween, 7 months, born 7 months. But I don't know. I say, well, I don't know how this guy lives like this. And if you talk to him, he can fight with you. Like, yeah. No, I say that. They are saying this. I didn't say that. You know, it's not like that.
Sure.
I don't know.
So he defends himself. And here's a man, Rodolfo. Your brother never feels safe. Do you understand it? He's always never feeling safe. And what he does is he stays out of view. This is the kind of guy who believes that if you could pen him down, if you could peg him down, you know, you'd probably wind up destroying him. So he's always an escape artist. Some people are poisoned like that for their entire lives. They just got to get away. They got to get away. They got to get away. They got to show illusions. They got to show you what you don't.
He's doing things really dangerous for me. I mean, like driving without driver license, buying car and things, and he doesn't even, you know, I'm so sorry for you,
Rodolfo, because it's so hard to love him. The only thing I want to ask you is one thing. When you and he were children, were you living together?
Yeah, I'm 10 years older than him.
You're 10 years older than him.
Actually, I have to raise him. You know, he doesn't have any problem.
This is like your own child.
Yes, that's why I tried to help him, but
Rodolfo, can I ask you one question?
Yeah.
Have you ever cried in front of your brother?
No, not really. Like, well, I asked my mother, and my mother did this, like, when we were kids. No. I cried here of something that happened with me with my life, but not like a divorce, and I have a divorce and everything. And he hugged me like I never feel he hugged me before when he... And he saw me crying, and if he starts working for somebody, he jumps to a boss in a minute. I don't know. Everybody trusts him.
I hear you.
In the moment, he...
Well, what I'm saying to you, and the reason I have to go now, Rodolfo, but one of the things I'm saying to you is when a family doesn't have the option to be vulnerable, all they could do is be on offensive. So what they're doing is he's attacking because he's afraid to cry. And that's what this is all about for him. And eventually it'll get to him, and I'm sorry for you. I'm sorry that you lost your brother.
Yeah, something that
there's
nothing
can
that
do
we
is
can
just,
do with that, right?
Yeah, just wait for him to come back to you. Let him know that you love him. Thanks so much for calling up.
Thank you very much.
And I hope you cool down.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. Long Island Expressway, 99 degrees. My gosh almighty, what that must be like. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. It's sad that we have to grow up, but we can't take any more calls. It's sad that we have to grow up. And sometimes we've got to separate with the people who can't see themselves. You know, sometimes if you see them and they just can't see where they are and what they're doing, you got to let them have their own space and go off and try to find a world where people are more real. Sometimes you got to do it. And sometimes you just got to love people the way they are. I'll be back with you Tuesday at 1 p.m. Not Tuesday. We're not going to be on air on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week coming up because there's going to be some, I believe there's some hearings that are being played. That might change, but stay in touch with the station to find out. And if so, if I'm not with you Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be back with you next Thursday at 1 p.m., my friends.